Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Hello and welcome back to another episode brought to you guys by sportsuse.com. As always, look, Gary Martin on the pod this weekend. Mate, great to have another NCAA guest on. We've had quite a few good ones recently. Before we get into that, though, close to chat about in terms of road relays, races coming up. Obviously, got the Mizuno Amsterdam Marathon next weekend as well. Where do you want to start, bud?
Maybe let's just start with the road relays, because it was. I thought there was a few interesting results, and well, the biggest takeaway for me at the road relays was just how deep both the men's and women's fields were. And I just think this. Oh, I'm just so excited for this cross season when you look at how strong these fields were, and just on the men's side, anywhere from 16:45 to about 16:05, that 20-second sort of ballpark there, it just floods of men in and around that sort of rhythm, in and around that sort of time. And then obviously when you go a little bit further back to 16:15, you know, within 30 seconds over a sort of 6K loop, and everyone running. I think what was interesting is it was so deep, and everyone's obviously running different legs. They've got different motivations, different circumstance within the race. And yeah, they all sort of come in very, very similar times out there. And I guess it's kind of what you'd expect. They're all very similar over 5K, but it was interesting. And again, on the women's, it was good to see Abby Donnelly back and just commanding victory for her. Big win on leg one. You know, the only person to run under 18 minutes on the women's side. And yeah, she's looking obviously at a big half. She's running well. She had a good marathon earlier on in the year. And I just wonder where Donnelly's going to go, whether we're going to see her sort of attack Liverpool, attack Eurocross and try and qualify for the World Cross, or whether she has one eye on popping out, like a few people, popping out a big one in Valencia, because we know there's going to be a lot of Brits in Valencia. We've heard a few more rumours of some extra Brits who are going to be doing the Valencia marathons. I think basically people have to do one or the other, and I just wonder if Donnelly's going to be cross-country or attack a marathon in Valencia.
Yeah, I know we're cross-country biased, but for me, I'm just like, how can you turn down the opportunity to go to Eurocross, place high, and then opportunity for a World Cross next year as well?
Donnelly is, you know, she is someone who can qualify for the World Cross. But I think I know Liverpool isn't a direct qualification, but you come top two or something at Liverpool and then you try.
And they're not top 12 in Euros.
Yeah. You're basically on the plane to World Cross. So that's realistic for her, and she can do that. She's done it before. And so it would be great to see her sort of really prepare for that World Cross in Tallahassee, because I think it's going to be a huge, huge event.
Yeah, it is, mate. Obviously, great course. Atmosphere will be great. The timing's so much better than normal as well, obviously, being earlier in the year. And so I do think we'll just have a lot stronger teams, with people not getting worried or scared about it kind of affecting their track build-up too much. So I think the depth we'll see. Obviously, the depth's always like, the talent's always crazy at the top end. But I think sometimes, yeah, we don't necessarily get our best British teams or best European teams out there.
Mate, and if it's in the Olympics, people have got to start getting used to racing cross, at the high level, right? So, because that could be huge if it does get into the Olympics. I'm not convinced. But yeah, I agree there. And talking of cross, I mean, Gary Martin said he'd be tempted. Whether his schedule allows for it.
He said likely a no, but he would be tempted. I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
He's saying it would be great to do. And, you know, because the thing is, you look at the NCAA cross and you're like, well, if you're the top American at the NCAA cross, chances are probably one of the best cross-country runners in the US right now.
Yeah.
When you take out those who, you know, obviously America, a little bit like the UK, there's a lot of great American runners who won't bother even trying to qualify for the World Cross. Yeah. But it was, I think the road relays interesting. I mean, and the men in form, I mean, just sort of announcing themselves, Jacob Kahn, James Kingston, Joe Hudson looks strong. Obviously, he won leg one, so which might be a sort of newish name for a few of us. In the UK, he's come back from America. He's going to be based down in London now. And obviously, he's a 28-20 guy with the 10K. So, yeah, he's definitely going to be one to watch coming across country campaign. But Carn and Kingston, they're both off to for a cross on the 26th as well. So Slade's going to be in that team. Yeah, they're getting ready to open their seasons on the mud. That was a road race. Well, I mean, shout out to Cambridge and Colwich, right? I mean, you know, big victory for them. We know they've been at it for a few years, and it's almost been a surprise that they hadn't managed to win it yet. And obviously, yeah, everything just aligned, and they were just a better team, just so deep, so deep. I mean, and I think with them, all of their guys were in. Obviously, Elson didn't even, well, he might have been working, but he didn't have to work too hard on that last leg. Like it was, but Escalante Phillips threw down a really good performance, and just all very, very consistent, all down and in and around that 16-minute mark, pretty much. And so, yeah, big win. Good to see them after a few years come away with the title. And the women's, I mean, Vale Royal was maybe not a surprise to some, but yeah, big result for them.
Yeah, I think anytime AFD aren't on the top spot, it's always a little bit of a surprise. And that's no disrespect to other teams, just because they always just put out such a strong team, like you say, particularly on the women's side. And yeah, Vale Royal, it just shows you though how like having just a deep, consistent team is so key in the road relays. Like you don't need anyone crazy, and that's no disrespect to the athletes who did run, but like it's just all about consistency across the legs. And yeah, fair play to Vale Royal.
So that was the road relays. And it's funny, the road relays, because a lot of people do it who, like, we talk about the cross and stuff, but you look at quite a lot of people and they probably won't even do much cross.
Well, you have a real mixture, don't you? You have the people who are getting ready for cross, and like you said, you have the people that are then going to go over and target a marathon, and it's just a bit of a nice way to get out for your club, isn't it? And at this time of year, no one's really got anything, unless you are running Chicago on Sunday, right? Like, I'm almost like, why wouldn't you go through the road relays? So
that's it. Outside of that, mate, Brazov 10K, Phil Sessman 28:19. I think he was hoping for a little quicker, but hey, he's off to Amsterdam in a couple of weeks, and he's in, you know, he must be very, very close to peak marathon shape. And if you watch some of it, he's got a good new YouTube channel out now. And if you watch some of that, the sessions that he throws down are just, it is mesmerizing. You know, the guy makes 3-minute Ks just so, he just locks in on that. Like, he can just handle 3-minute Ks so comfortably. And I'd be stunned if he doesn't pop a good marathon the way that he's operating. He ran 28:19, Kate Axford 32:44. So perhaps both of them wanted a little bit more, but it's good to see Axford back, I guess.
Yeah, I think they're both strong runs. And again, I think Axford, someone we'll see a lot more over the next few weeks. And for Sessman, he's not going to care when he runs a good marathon, like you say, next Sunday. I'm sure the 10K was not on his priority list, if you like. Doesn't matter how good 10K shape he's in. Like you say, he's meticulous, he's consistent, he's ready to go, and he's in a great field for that Amsterdam marathon as well.
He is in a great field. What is he, sort of going in
18th?
Going in with his 208 lifetime best, he's about 30.
Yeah, 18th, yeah. Or 17th, because Mukhtar's been scratched.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a deep field, but the problem is, again, it's one of those ones where there's a few guys around that sort of 2.7, 2.8, but then there's a lot of those who have run 2.7, 2.6 are all Ethiopian or Kenyan, which means they just run a 2.4 and blow up. So might have a smaller group than it first looks on paper, to be honest with you. So we'll see how he gets on. But hey, so there's a little bit of road action. It was cool to talk to Gary Martin. I mean, talk about the NCAA. One of the things that stood out to me about Gary Martin was the fact that he's only ever been drug tested twice, and that was through the university. The NCAA, he's never been tested by the NCAA or, you know, by USADA or WADA or whatever. And crazy, you know, for a guy who is basically, well, where's he, like half a second off the NCAA collegiate record and stuff like that?
Yeah. Well, he's a pro. He's a pro level runner.
He's a pro.
Yeah.
He's operating at crazy level. Crazy.
He obviously as well himself is sat there saying, yeah, we need more of this.
You need way more testing.
He's about it. Yeah. But yeah, it was real, real good to chat to him, wasn't it, mate? I think just it's a cool story and someone that's really making the most of that collegiate system. Obviously, he's got an NIL deal with Brooks as well. He's just living the dream, isn't he?
Yeah, but also he, like, 357 in high school is just nuts. And, you know, this, for me, like, he is still severely underrated, Gary Martin. The way that he was able to run that in high school, the way that he's able to develop into the athlete he is. You look at his progression, and, you know, he talks himself, he's never been injured. ever been injured in his life. And I just think that those are the signs of, yes, good coaching, but also a very, very smart athlete and a robust athlete, an athlete who's doing all the right things on and off the track, and just knows his body really well. He handles pressure well. I mean, he races an insane amount as well. It's just, the guy is, yeah, he's very, very impressive in that regard.
Well, it just makes me think a bit about, obviously, look at someone like Grant Fisher now. He's obviously sub four in high school. And look, he had a great NCAA career for like the general athlete, but for a sub four miler in high school, like it wasn't as good as some, right? But he steadily went through, did well, and it was when he came out of college on the other side that obviously, look, now he's medaled on the world stage. So yeah, we'll see what the future has in store for Gary, you know.
What strikes with Grant but also Gary is, like, these guys are just insanely talented. You know, you don't run sub four in high school. You don't run 3:57 in high school and not be talented. You know, this is a sport he took up as a sort of basically a freshman in high school, as it was anyway. You know, within 3 years, he's running 3:57 for the mile. Yeah. I mean, he is incredibly talented. And, you know, when you talk to them as well, like, he hasn't done anything. You know, it's not a Jakob situation here. It's not a Niels Laros situation. It's not that whole European training method where everything's been dialed in and so intense. You know, this guy's just gone through the high school system. He's now at Virginia and he's got a great coach. He really does. And we do talk about Vin Lenana a bit as well. But it shows that, I mean, I think those are the guys you look at, the sort of Josh Kerrs, and you're like, when he turns pro, and Grant Fisher as well, like, everyone always said how crazy talented he was at Stanford. He was kind of, he was getting, it was heavy schooling. He was operating at sort of 80%, 90% of what he could do just to stay healthy and stuff like that and juggle school and everything. You look at Gary Martin, you're like, he's very similar to that. Mm. I think when he turns pro, we're going to see another jump from him. He's managed to jump every year in his career. And that's what's, like, exciting about this guy.
Yeah. And you mentioned what it's like talking to them. We need to find someone who, when we ask what you're doing in high school to run so quick, they actually say, yeah, I was training like an absolute demon.
Training like a beast. No, never would.
Because everyone we speak to, they're like, yeah, my coach was really good. And they just kind of eased me in and I just somehow ran 3:57. It's crazy. Yeah.
And what's even more impressive about that race, he did it himself. He did that
race.
Yeah,
no paces.
He did that race, no paces, solo, gun to tape. Like,
yeah. You compare that to obviously Alan Webb doing it in Prefontaine.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jakob doing it in like the Dream Mile and like, you know, getting those crazy records and stuff like that at Laros. So great guest. We'll let you enjoy. I mean, a few other things that's worth mentioning. Friday Night Under Lights, talking about the road race, 28th of November. Sports Shoes, Adidas, and the team of Friday Night Under Lights. That event, by the way, is almost sold out. Get your entries in for a 5K post-Liverpool. What is it? Six days after Liverpool Cross. You're going to be in the peak of your life, shape of your life.
Or you'll be going to Eurocross, so then you can just scratch. It's fine. We'll let you off.
Yeah, there's only six spots on the plane to Euros. And
and if not, you'll be in bad seats. So.
Yeah. So
win-win.
Yep. Sponsored by Adidas, so that'll be a good one. I think that's it, mate. For obviously, we've got Amsterdam, we've got Chicago to enjoy. Athlos is tonight. Long jump was getting underway in New York already. Prize money's big for Athlos, by the way. I don't even mention it last week, but I think it's 60K or something for the win, and then goes down to about, you know, the usual sort of K for, what was it, 3K for eighth place, but good 25K for second maybe. So it's similar to Diamond League or World Champ. It's similar, very, very similar to World Champs prize money is Athlos. So yeah, the reason we're seeing all the stars like Keely, Georgia Bell, Mary Mora, Faith, Kipyegon, they're getting paid. Made no mistake about it. And I guess you would need to be to still be doing your track season on the 10th of November.
It's October. Getting ahead of yourself, mate. We're not there yet. But look, yeah, enjoy this one with Gary. Thanks for listening to us. We'll catch you guys very soon. Okay, first off, Gary Martin, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on. You're in Virginia right now, university, and we were just saying off air that you've just raced. So look, tell our listeners in the UK, what is Gary Martin up to right now in his college schedule?
Yeah, well, as far as running goes, I'm just kind of making the transition from 1500 up to 8K, which, you know, kind of a big jump. So just, you know, building the mileage, getting the threshold workouts in. And I ran my first cross country race last weekend. It was definitely a little bit of a shock to the system, but it was good to just kind of rip the band-aid off, get back into it. And, you know, just going to spend the next probably month or so to get really good training in and then get ready for the NCAA cross country postseason. So yeah, that's been good. Other than that, I'm just kind of going to class, living life, you know. Life's been good the last month or so.
Mate, we'll get into last year's track season, that great NCAA season that you had. But let's just talk about that race on the weekend, because I was watching it from afar and I couldn't believe how deep the race was so early on in the NCAA cross-country season.
Yeah, I mean, it was going into it, we knew it was going to be a lot of the top teams in the country, but you never really know. Like a race like that, I've been in big fields like that where it goes out like a little slower and then, you know, kind of build into it. And then I've been in the opposite where it just is a sprint from the gun. And that one was definitely a sprint from the gun. There was a few guys at the front just kind of pushing it. I think it was a mid-230s first K. And, you know, first race back, didn't really know what to expect. So just kind of stayed a little patient and kind of bided my time and was pretty happy with it. It was definitely room for improvement. You know, I think, you know, by the end of the season, I want to be up there with the top guys. But for my first race back after long track season, it was definitely a good starting point. And our team ran great. We were second overall and we're ranked fourth in the country now. So that was a really exciting result. And it was really, really just a fun trip and really successful overall.
Yeah. And talk about that transition you mentioned, because obviously you ran the Olympic trials, so a bit later than a lot of your teammates, I presume. How much of a break do you have after that? When do you come back in for cross-country training? And what does training look like before that race? So what have you prepped for in terms of running a 230 or mid-230s first K or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think after track, I was pretty lucky. Like the body was feeling pretty good. So I didn't feel like I needed like a huge break or like a ton of downtime, but still just mentally important to reset. So I took like a week and a half just off of running, kind of just do what I want to do, and then started to build up again middle of August. So going into the race, I was probably just like a couple weeks into like higher mileage and was running like high 80s, which is definitely on the higher end for me, and kind of came down a little bit for the week of the race. But like you said, haven't really touched a lot of like that fast race pace stuff yet. Like I'm still, you know, in the past I've had, you know, 2 or 3 months over the summer to build up mileage and get that kind of base work in. But that's kind of been postponed to September and August for, you know, the kind of longer, slower stuff for me now. So just kind of still keeping at that and, you know, waiting, putting off the faster stuff and kind of letting that race be my first taste of that kind of workout and first experience with that.
Well, you say you didn't need much of a break after that NCAA season and then obviously the Olympic trials. From the outside, you were looking in going, man, this guy's been going all year long. And not only that, I think the level of races you've contested have just been ridiculous. You know, you've been head to head with Ethan Strandl through the indoor season. Then, you know, you go into the outdoors and the ACCs as well is an incredible conference. And so it looked like you never had an easy race. But yet you got to the end of the season and you still felt like you didn't need too much of a break. I just wonder how you were able to feel like that.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was, I think there was a few weeks like in the spring track season, like from April onwards, where, you know, I kind of forced myself to take some downtime and like really take like a week of just lesser training and kind of just let the body reset. And I feel like those few weeks were kind of like key to my longevity in the season. And, you know, I would have a really big training block, but then it would usually be accompanied by just letting the body kind of reset, just like let the training soak in and then get back to work. And I feel like that was kind of the biggest thing keeping me healthy and, you know, still mentally fresh throughout the season, is I just never really had a period where I was going hard for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks in a row. Like I always felt like there was a little bit of a reset in between them. And that was super helpful.
You're in almost a, not a completely unique position in that so many, I guess, good individuals are coming out of the NCAA right now and have been for the past few years, but somewhat of a unique position in the, surely your individual aspirations and your desire to go through NCAAs and then go to the Olympic trials and things like that, does that ever conflict with what a team's doing? Obviously you're in cross country now and it's very team focused, but being on a slightly different program, how does that kind of relationship work and how do you manage that with your coach?
I think me and my coach do a really good job. Coach Van, he's been Stanford, Oregon, Dartmouth. He has a ton of experience and, you know, I feel like he kind of knows what it takes to balance the two. And we do a really good job of, you know, sitting down at the start of the year and then periodically throughout the year and just making sure my schedule is, you know, peaking so that I'm ready to go for these big team races like ACCs, like NCAA cross, but then still having a lot left in the tank for, you know, the postseason at NCAAs and Olympic trials and stuff like that. And, you know, I think training wise, it kind of ends up lending itself to working out well. Like cross country, if I was a pro runner and I wasn't focusing on cross country right now, I'd probably be doing pretty similar training with higher mileage and long threshold stuff. And so I never really felt like cross country got in the way, because the way I train, it kind of just lends itself to setting me up well for track. But it also helps that I have, you know, multiple teammates. Like Nate Mountain was, you know, a finalist in the U.S. steeplechase, and Harrison Witt's a 352 miler, and Brett Gardner was, you know, an NCAA finalist. So we just have a bunch of guys now who, you know, are pretty much pro level runners. And it feels like we have like a mini pro group in Charlottesville, even though we're all in college still. So that's been a big help too.
Let's talk about Vin, because, you know, that's a name that we've seen. You know, I've seen a little bit, but I guess being over here in the UK, I know he's a legend in the US. And, you know, one thing which is unique to you is you were an absolute hotshot high schooler. You know, you were incredibly talented. You were a sub four miler. And how did you choose your university? Was it largely down to him?
It was a mix of things. I think I really narrowed my schools down to, I wanted good academics. You know, it's always good to have a good, obviously running was the goal, but have a good degree to fall back on. But one of the schools that had been competitive running for the past few years. And I looked mostly at like kind of the East Coast of the United States, because I kind of knew I wanted to be, you know, not like super close to home, but, you know, just be able to go home and visit family and stuff. That was definitely important to me. So that probably narrowed it down to like five or six schools. And then from there, it was just kind of about, you know, visiting the coaches, visiting the team, seeing who I clicked with. And UVA, Coach Van and Coach Dunbar, they were a huge part of it. Like, I felt like I would fit really well in their training, and I felt like they had a really good vision for me. But then even bigger than that, it was just kind of like meeting the guys on the team and seeing how I'd fit in. And I felt like it felt like a pretty big family, and it kind of felt like I, you know, my high school team was pretty close, and we had a very family-like environment. And I felt like it was very similar to UVA. So, you know, the combination of the coaches and the team definitely made me want to be a part of it.
Man, before we jump into a little bit more, and Vin, should we touch on your high school career? Because I want to know what I want to know. Do you get asked about that a lot? Do you wish just sort of want to leave that in the past a bit? But I mean, you were a 357 high schooler. Apparently, I was reading, this is on a Let's Run post a while back. You know, obviously when you ran that time, only you and Jim Ryan are the only two people to have broken a sub 4 mile without a pacemaker. So that's a bit of an achievement in itself. So let's talk about what did life look like for you as a 357 high schooler?
Yeah, I mean, it was weird, because it was always, I think sub four, you know, once I started running fast, that was always the goal I always had in the back of my head. But, you know, it's one of those things that it still feels like out of reach, especially when I did it. I think there was still only like, I don't even know, maybe like 10 guys who had done it in United States history. So I didn't really, it felt like it was like a little bit out of reach. But once I ran like 4:03 indoors my senior year, I was kind of like, okay, like this outdoor season could be the time, and had a couple attempts at it. I ran 4:09 and then 4:01 flat, and then just kind of went for it at our league championship meet, just solo, and went out and ran 3:57. And, you know, it was pretty special. I knew I had it in me, but it was kind of just like the culmination of the three really good years of high school running, and kind of just, you know, made me feel like I was ready for college and ready for the next step. And, you know, it was pretty exciting.
What did the training look like at the time?
It was, I think my high school coach did a really good job. He was a very knowledgeable guy, but he did a good job of keeping me undertrained versus overtrained, where I was probably running maybe 40 to 50 miles a week. And, you know, I don't think I did a ton of threshold compared to a lot of guys in high school. Like, I wasn't doing a ton of aerobic development, but just touching a lot on like that mile race pace and just getting confident on being able to just click off 59, 60 second laps. And that was kind of reflected in how I ran. I think I went like 59, 59, 59, 59. So I just, you know, I did workouts where I'd run quarters and 59 seconds in practice. And then I thought to myself, hey, I know I can go out and run that in a race now.
It's interesting, because I think that's probably what a lot of our UK based listeners, the best 1500 guys in school, like in your high school, are doing that sort of thing, versus what we hear a lot about in the US is, like you say, guys doing threshold from a young age, whereas no one really does threshold in the UK, or certainly not when Matt and I were growing up, and it was just 10 by 400 on a Tuesday and Thursday, and then running 30, 40 mile a week and just smashing the track. So
yeah, it's cool to hear. I mean, I definitely started incorporating like a little bit of tempo and threshold stuff my senior year. But, you know, compared to a lot of other runners, I think it was definitely more interval focused than other training programs.
When did you start running? Is running in your family? Is it something that you kind of grew up with, or did you find the sport yourself?
Not really. My dad played like club volleyball when he was in high school, and my mom was not athletic at all. So running was not in my background, but I grew up playing like baseball, soccer, basketball. And then I think I was in like kindergarten. So I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and there was like a flyer for track. And I don't know why, but I really wanted to run track as a 6 year old, which probably the first 6 year old ever to want to do that. But I ended up, so I went out for track, and I never really like got into it that seriously, but I ran like the 200, the 400, and I ended up quitting when I was like 9 years old, and then kind of just got talked back into doing it again. I think when I was 13, eighth grade year going into high school, kind of got talked back into doing it, and kind of became the thing of, I knew I wasn't going to be good enough at any of the other sports I played to go that far with them. So I was like, I might as well have a little more fun and like hang out with friends and do track. And even then, definitely didn't have any expectations of being that good at it. I kind of just thought it'd be a fun thing to do. But my freshman year of high school, I ran like 206 in the 800 and was like, all right, that was pretty good. And my friends talked me into doing cross country. And then my sophomore year of cross country, when I started to run a little more, I started to see really big improvement. And that was kind of when I realized if I actually started running and training and didn't just, you know, show up every now and then and race, I'd be pretty good.
Do you think there's any reason for it? That you just became such a natural at this sport? You know, the minute you started training a little bit seriously, you just got really good?
I don't know. I mean, I think playing a lot of sports, like, as a child definitely helped. Like, even when I played soccer especially, I could notice, like, I was always able to run more than the other guys on the field. So, you know, I always had that a little bit, but I don't really think there was anything that would have made me think I would have this much success in it, honestly. Like, it was definitely kind of a shock, like, when I started running cross country and I was just dropping like 30 to 60 seconds every race. It was pretty exciting, but I was like, I didn't even really expect this to happen.
And I got to ask, were you the man? Did you get a lot of love in high school when you ran 3:57? Like, I know football is obviously huge out there and, you know, they're the guys, aren't they? But surely you must have got some recognition. You must have been walking the halls and being recognized by everyone at school.
A little bit. I think that was, like, track is not a flashy sport, but I think that was kind of the moment where it got enough like local and regional attention where I think, you know, people started to realize that it was, you know, the 4 minute mile people kind of know about. So I think that was kind of when people started to take a little notice. So that was definitely a bonus.
Yeah. And obviously you chatted about kind of considering a few colleges. Obviously your studies are really important. What are you studying actually?
I'm major in media studies with a minor in psychology. So
okay.
Kind of like interest in journalism, and hopefully whenever I'm done running, if I don't get into coaching, do some kind of like sports journalism would be cool.
Nice. On the world champ circuit, maybe. So
that'd be nice.
Love it. Yeah. Did you have the option to kind of to turn pro out of high school?
I never really looked that into it. I mean, I had the brief thought about it. I, you know, even when I like talking to my parents, of course, they're a good voice of reason. And they were kind of like, there's no reason for you not to go to college, and the degree is important. And for me, especially, like, I kind of realized that if I went to Virginia, I would kind of have that development where I would have a year or two to be under guys who are better than me. And then, you know, and then make the step into being hopefully a pro caliber runner. And it, you know, worked out pretty perfectly where I was able to just kind of learn from those guys my first couple of years and then take a step.
Let's talk about that development at Virginia, because I think there's the way the NCAA is moving now, not many schools offer that same freedom to a freshman to just evolve, get used to the program. And then, you know, they're not buying into the long term anymore so much. Like, the transfer portal is crazy. And actually, how do you feel about that? You know, as someone who's gone through more of a traditional NCAA experience, and do you sort of look at other athletes who have come in for a couple of years, they're already established at 23 years of age, and, you know, they've competed on the pro circuit, some have been to the Olympics, like, and then they're competing up against you in college. How do you as an athlete feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like for the most part, for me at least, it's been like a positive factor, because, you know, I think we've seen in the last like 2 or 3 years that the NCAA is getting closer and closer to being a world-class league, pretty much, where you have guys running, you know, Olympic and world qualifying times. And I think a large part of that is you have these older guys coming in who are, you know, more physically developed and already able to run those times. And it kind of just raises the bar for everyone else. And I've had guys running really fast miles, really fast 5Ks to look up to. And, you know, I say, hey, if I'm going to be the best guy in the NCAA, I've got to be able to run 7:30 for 3K and sub 13 and sub 3:50 in the mile. So for me, at least, I mean, I know it's crazy, but I think it's been beneficial and just kind of forcing me to be better and, you know, progressing as an athlete. And this cross country season will be a challenge because there's guys who are older and stronger than me, but, you know, I'm just going to keep grinding away and try to step up. And, you know, 10K is a little out of my wheelhouse, but I think I can still run a really good one.
But was there pressure on you when you were a freshman, was there pressure on you at Virginia to deliver as a 3:57 high schooler?
maybe a little bit, but I never felt it from the people around me. Like I never felt it from my coaches or my teammates. And like I had ups and downs, and I had some really bad races as a freshman. I was like dead last in the ACC mile my first year, and then I was like eighth in the 1500 outdoors, and I was really sick for that race. So that was other factors, but I think they did a really good job of, you know, kind of just bringing me along slowly and working me into the training. And I got better as a first year. Like I ran 356 and 339, which small PRs, but still PRs. And I felt like I was getting stronger, but it definitely helped just having older guys who, you know, were going to NCAAs and were getting that experience. And I could kind of just train with them and sit in the background a little bit and, you know, learn from them.
Yeah, and you've obviously got kind of, I guess, the best of both in a way. Obviously signed that NIL deal with Brooks in April. Since they've come in, why would you leave the NCAA? Like, is there any reasons to leave the NCAA early?
Yeah, I mean, for me, there really hasn't been. I mean, I guess there's a world for someone where if you're, like, I understand the perspective of strike while the iron's hot. Like, if you're, you know, if you're a sophomore and you win a million titles and you set records and stuff, and, you know, I don't blame people who cash in on that and go pro. But for me, I just feel like I have a lot left to prove where, you know, I want to go win more. I want to win more titles indoors, and I want to win the 1500 outdoors, and I want to take a crack across country. So there was definitely, you know, I have a really good situation. I have a good training group and I have support from Brooks, and I felt like there was no reason for me to go pro early.
That rival with Ethan Trant, talking about winning NCAA's outdoors. I mean, just talk about the dynamic of that this season, because it seemed like there was a period, I think it was indoors even more so, that you guys seemed to race each other, what, five or six times in just a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, indoors it was kind of like coming off of cross country. I had, you know, same thing, we were kind of close in cross country. Like I beat him at ACCs and then he got the best of me at NCAAs. And, you know, it's one of those things where you have that guy who you see all the time and the mindset's just like, anything he can do, I can do. So I remember sitting on my couch and watching him run 3:48 in Boston, and I knew I was going to run Milrose a week later. And I kind of thought, all right, if he just ran three, I already thought I could run sub 3:50, but I was like, I got to go run 3:48 now. So that was kind of the goal after seeing that. And it just, I mean, it was awesome getting to run, race him all the time, because, you know, like I said earlier, it made me better as an athlete. And I think it made me run faster, kind of just, you know, elevated the conference as a whole. And, you know, after indoor, I feel like he got the best of me a few times outdoors, more than I would have liked. But it was overall, it's just been like really good having him in the conference and racing him so much. And I feel like it's made me a lot stronger as a competitor and as an athlete.
And once you've raced a guy so often like you did indoors and outdoors, were you coming up with strategies to try and beat him, race tactics? Were you looking to change things? Did you change your training to try and combat and, you know, sort of attack his weaknesses?
I don't think I ever changed training, but there was definitely a couple times like ACCs, cross country, I pushed from far out, and I felt like him and Parker, I felt like I broke him a little bit, and I was able to, instead of out kicking them, just like out grind them. Mm-hmm. So then my mindset, you know, I was going to race Ethan in the 5K at ACC indoors. So I kind of had the mindset going in of, let's take it from far out, try to just grind it and try to run the legs out of him, and did not work at all. He just kind of sat on me and out kicked him. So I was like, all right, got to go back to the drawing board now. I can't let that happen. And then NCAA indoors, the DMR, you know, he took the lead with 400 to go, and I kind of just stayed more patient and didn't move till 150 to go, and, you know, able to get the best of him there. But it was really hard because, you know, a couple times where you think you have a guy figured out like Ethan, and you try to draw up a strategy, and he's able to just run and compete in a lot of different ways. So it's definitely hard, but I think it's also made me better because it's helped me to, you know, fine tune my skills and be able to run in multiple ways too.
You talk about how, you know, you can run with him, and when he goes and does something, it gives you the confidence to do it. Seeing him obviously made a world's team and gone and do there, how confident are you that, yeah, next year that's your spot, or next time is a major, sorry, that's your spot, you know?
Yeah, I feel this year in general just was a big confidence boost. And, you know, NCAA's outdoors was a little bit of a disappointment. I was fifth, and it was a really tactical race. I just kind of didn't have the best kick the last 100 meters, but I felt like I bounced back big time at USA's, and I was sixth there. And I mean, even bigger than that, with 200 meters to go, I was right in the mix. And, you know, that was the first time I've ever had a taste of that where I was like, you know, I could see the guys who were going to make the team, and I had a chance of making the team. So both seeing Ethan do it and also just being there and, you know, kind of getting a feel for what it looks like to make a team, I think is just really valuable experience. And next year, I guess there's the World Ultimate Championship. So it'll be a, a little different, but the next time there's a world championship, I feel like I'm going to be ready to go.
What did you make of the Tokyo 15?
It was,
were you surprised?
It was interesting. I was surprised. I did not expect Nader. And I mean, I felt like Whiteman ran a near perfect race, and it's really hard to account for that kind of close from Nader. And I felt like Whiteman tactically ran it so well, and it wasn't like he was running out of steam at the end. Nader just ran a better race, but it was a great race. It was super exciting to watch.
Were you surprised how slow it was in comparison to how we've seen, you know, 1500s go over the last few years? And do you think there is going to be a shift more towards these sort of tactical 1500s?
A little bit. I think it's tough when you don't have like Jakob or Josh Kerr or Cole Hawker in the field. And, or sorry, Kerr was in the field, but obviously not at his best with his injury. But I think when you have a guy like that, especially Jakob, who just thinks and I mean, sometimes is better than everyone else, it just kind of, there's incentive to want to run from the front and make it fast, because you have the mindset of, if I make it a 3:27 race, no one can hang with me. But I think that field, there was a little more open, and I don't know if there was a guy in that field who was going to say, hey, I'm going to make this a 3:27 race and just run the legs out of everyone. So I think it kind of just depends on the field. And, you know, in the future, if we see more fields like that, where if there's just a bunch of guys who it's pretty wide open and, you know, you don't really know who the favorites are, I think maybe that could play out again. But, you know, if there's someone like Jakob in the field, I think it makes it faster.
Do you have any dealings with Kerr via Brooks? Are we going to, see you guys knocking out sessions together anytime soon?
Maybe. Yeah, I haven't got to meet him too much yet, but it'd be pretty cool to hopefully see him at some point, get some workouts in.
Well, look, mate, let's chat about your coach, because we obviously mentioned it earlier and then kind of went back to your high school stuff. But talk about Coach Vin. What's his, I guess, approach to training? What does a typical week look like for you? You could talk about right now and maybe in the summer as well, I think would be pretty cool for the listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I think historically he's been a pretty big like mid-distance coach, but I still feel like my training, at least, you know, obviously catered towards me, but very strength-based. And, you know, I'm someone who 1500 is probably the focus, but I can go up and run a really good 5K. And, you know, I'm doing, especially in cross country, I'm doing a lot of like not crazy high mileage, but running like high 80s, mid to high 80s for mileage at my peak. And then just getting like a good threshold workout in on Tuesdays, like a tempo or threshold on Fridays. And, you know, as the season goes on, working in like intervals and race pace stuff, and kind of just, you know, getting a feel for that, but really just building the strength with two good workouts, you know, 14 or 15 mile long run. And I don't feel like it's anything crazy, but kind of just, you know, building my strength while keeping me healthy and ready to go by the time track season hits too.
Healthy being the key word. Have you ever had a serious injury?
No, I've been, last year I had like a little bit of a hamstring thing for a few weeks, and that was like the most serious thing I've had since I've been at Virginia. So, and even then, like it didn't really interrupt training at all. And I just kind of had to just take care of it and then knock it out. So I've been lucky. Obviously that's something we focus on, and I don't think it's a coincidence that I've been healthy this whole time, but I've definitely have been able to just stay consistent and put in really good mileage because of that.
And not just in college, in high school as well. You were never injured.
No, nothing in high school, knock on wood.
That's impressive in itself, you know, and consistency just obviously speaks volumes, doesn't it? But one thing I was reading up on, which I found interesting about the way you guys train, and you might know if this is becoming more popular in the US. Obviously, we've seen clips of Cole Hawker and people like Cooper T using the Altigee or the anti-gravity treadmills as well. And you've been sort of documented using those to get your sort of some very small double threshold sessions in on there. Is that something the team uses a lot?
More so, our team uses the anti-gravity, like the light speed lift, a lot. Mm. It's more so been, I think, I don't know if there's other guys. I've been experimenting, obviously, with talking to the coaches. Like, it's something we came up with in the last couple of years. But with doing, yeah, like you said, that light, like double threshold on the light speed and kind of running at like 85% body weight, but still running like what my normal threshold pace would be. But obviously, because it's 85% body weight, kind of just getting the heart rate up to, you know, like high 150s, low 160s. So, you know, really not anything too intense, but just kind of getting like a light second session in and just getting the heart rate up to like that moderate or light threshold zone.
Yeah. That's very interesting, because yeah, one of the conversations we were having is as the, you know, there's so much tech in the sport now, super shoes have made a big difference to how people can train, how much volume they can handle. And that might be another area where people can now add on even more volume at much kind of higher intensities, but obviously with way, way less impact.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's been a big part, like just running one or two runs a week on that and keeping me healthy too, and, you know, just taking some load off the legs.
Yeah. You mentioned obviously that kind of the training itself is, I think you said nothing special or something to that effect, right? What is special then about your coach? Like, how do you prep for races? What are the conversations like going into the race season? You know, like what makes you tick and how does he get into that? You know,
I think the biggest thing about Coach Vinnie, Coach Dunbar, I feel like they do a really good job of kind of, you know, I feel like the best thing about an athlete is you want to be willing to go 100% like all the time. And then the best coach is able to hold them back and know when it's time to do that and when it's not. And I feel like that's been the biggest thing where, you know, so often I'll finish a workout and I'll be annoyed or frustrated or I'll want to do more, but they kind of know when, you know, when it's okay for me to do more and when they should kind of just, you know, hold me back and keep me healthy. And I feel like that's kind of been the big thing, even more than any specific like race strategy or planning is, you know, there's the occasional really hard workout where I'm, you know, I'm going into the well, but most of the time it's just a, you know, I'm finishing with a lot left in the tank and then, you know, just saving energy for when it's time to go really hard, like in a race or a workout like that.
Is that Trevor Dunbar? Is that Trevor Dunbar I used to run for Oregon?
Yeah, Trevor Dunbar. He's been here for 5 or 6 years now at UVA. He's been here my whole time. Yeah.
Wow, that's very great. I guess they both have they? When did Vin first join Virginia?
Vin got here in 2019. And then I think Trevor got here in 2021, I want to say. 2020 or 2021.
Right. Yeah. So it is an amazing team. And obviously another athlete who came through that Virginia squad, Sean Cohen.
Yeah, Shane Cohen.
Shane Cohen. Sorry, yeah. Shane Cohen.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, which was what, last year in the 800? One NCAA?
Yeah, 2024. Yeah. And he's still here. He still trains at UVA, so I get to work out with him.
So he turned pro and just lives and is living in the area now.
Yeah. He's pro in Nike, trains here, and we actually, our hometowns are, we live like 15 minutes away. So when we're at home too, we run together all the time over the summer.
Ah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Have you thought about, obviously you're going to be graduating, were you graduating in the summer? Have you thought about what are you going to do when you turn pro? Obviously you signed that Neil deal with Brooks. And in fact, why Brooks? What did you love about Brooks?
I mean, the biggest thing is I had run in Brooks shoes and I never really liked them. I knew, you know, they keep me healthy and I do all my training in them now. So that's been a big part of it. And also just from like talking to, you know, the Brooks people, Brooks coaches, stuff like that. Like I really liked the people they had. I feel like a lot of their values like resonated with me and felt like it was just like a good fit. And, you know, for what I wanted to do on both like representing Brooks and with some of like the social media stuff, I felt like it would be pretty cool to work with them. And it's been really good. It's been over, I guess, like a year and a half now. So it's been a really good partnership.
Yeah. Do they, how much influence do they have in terms of like, what you do? And I don't mean them overstepping, but as in like,
no, you're good.
If you wanted to, like, can you go to their headquarters and act like a pro would in the same way like Kirk can go get tests in there? Like, obviously you've got stuff at college, but how much kind of input do they have in your training rather than just like the commercial side of things?
Yeah. I mean, training wise, they don't really, it's not like they're like giving me training or anything, but like I've gone the last two winters now, like I've gone out to Seattle and I've, you know, been at the headquarters and done stuff like that. And, you know, they had, like there was the opportunity over the summer to go out and like do stuff at the intern, like do stuff at Brooks headquarters and work with them over the summer. And it hasn't really, you know, I've been racing so late the last two summers, I haven't really ended up doing that, but you know, it's been really good in terms of having those options and, you know, having the support from them in the winter and going out and seeing stuff too.
Mate, I've got to ask, with the cross country season, obviously on the horizon and the NCAAs and effectively the leading Americans at the NCAA cross country championships are probably in with a shout of going to the World Cross Country Championships, which is obviously in Tallahassee. Are you tempted? Have you thought about that at all? Is that an aim for a lot of people over in the US?
I don't know. I've thought about it. I've been tempted. I haven't talked to my coaches about it or anything. I feel like it's more likely not than likely that I would, but it's definitely something that if cross country went really well and I feel like I was itching for another cross race, I'd be open to it, but I'm probably just going to play it by ear and see how the season goes, because indoor kind of comes around quick where you're trying to get qualifying marks at the end of December or at the beginning of December as well.
Yeah, is that stressful just going from season to season?
A little bit. I mean, for me, it's exciting. Like usually by the end of cross, I'm just excited to get back on the track. And, you know, last year it was stressful in the sense of like I knew I was stronger than I've ever been, but I had no idea how, you know, I'm running a track race 2 weeks after cross country when I haven't even touched 3K pace and I'm going to try to go run a 3K. So I had no idea how it was going to feel, but it went surprisingly well. So I feel like it's always a little bit of a little stress of, you know, I'm making this switch and I have to turn around and do track stuff now. I don't know how it's going to go, but it's usually once I get into it, it's pretty fun and I usually end up feeling pretty good.
Yeah. Going into this season, is there almost less stress or less pressure for the postseason? Because obviously, like you mentioned, next year there's no kind of major champs. If you're a US athlete, obviously over in the UK we have Europeans and things that people take quite seriously. But do you almost, and I know I'm sure in your NCAA season you're staying within the college season, but there must be part of your mind that's thinking, yeah, maybe I could get on that team in the summer, whereas next year you won't have that kind of nagging away at the back of your head.
Yeah, I think a little bit. I mean, it's tough because I feel like I've done, like, I haven't even given much thought to track next year. Like, I feel like I finished this season. It was kind of like the focus is cross country right now, and I'll get to track when I get to it. But I definitely feel like last year in general, just having a really good postseason and kind of feeling like I elevated myself took some stress off my shoulders. And I feel like I'm, you know, last year I feel like it was about proving myself. And now I know how good I am. And now I just need to go out and stay consistent and keep doing it. But obviously, NCAAs will be the big goal, and then right. I'll go from there. But it'll definitely be nice to just kind of be able to focus on NCAAs and, you know, USA. I think USA's will be a goal as well, but just kind of take it one race at a time.
And then I just want to ask just finally on, you know, how ACC's, a lot more schools have been added to that conference, including Stanford. That makes your life a lot harder, I guess, as a runner, so you have much harder races through the season. But am I right in saying that in the States, in the conference, in order to add a school to a conference, all the schools have to sort of agree and vote them in?
I think so. I don't know exactly how it works. If I had to guess, it's probably like 75% or something. Like, I don't know if it's everyone, but it's the majority has to approve it.
And why did everyone accept Stanford?
I mean, football drives everything. So from a money standpoint, I think it's just kind of, I mean, Stanford football, not going to sugarcoat it, hasn't been great this year, but I think just from a sports and from a football perspective, like even if it's not football, I guess Stanford has like really good sports and, you know, they're a really positive addition to the ACC. And then like SMU is a really good football team. So, you know, they were a positive get, and same with Cal. And I feel like football is like 80% of the factors, and like the other sports are like 20%, and it's kind of just what's going to make your conference the most competitive sports league at this point. And, you know, money drives a lot of that. And for cross country, we're lucky because Stanford's a great cross country team and adds some good competition and gets us more ready for the postseason. But it's definitely, I feel like the other sports are probably, they're thinking about that more than they're thinking about cross country.
Yeah. What would you say the toughest conference is for track and field? For cross country, yeah, toughest conference.
Cross country, right now it's the ACC, I think. Like, I think if you look at the rankings, I think we had like 5 or 6 teams in the top 15 or something between like us, Wake Forest, Notre Dame, Stanford, Syracuse, UNC. Like, those are all really good teams.
Yeah, and the same on the track. So basically the ACC is the best conference in the US right now.
I think so. I'm biased, but I think so.
Yeah. Love it. And I just love your attitude that you're like, it's great for us because the competition's better, rather than I've got to run a kind of a tough conference. I love that. But look, let's get into some quick fire just before we finish. Do you have any good drugs testing stories at all?
Do they test in the NCAA?
Honestly, they do not test as much as they should is my opinion. And I've never been tested by the NCAA. And I get tested like a couple times a year by UVA, our school, but NCAA never been tested, which is kind of crazy to me. I think there should be more testing.
Yeah. What are you, second all time in the mile indoors?
Yeah. And our DMR was NCAA champions.
Man, has anyone on your team get tested? Obviously the college tests, but
I think Shane, when he won the 800, got tested for winning.
Right.
But, they only, as far as I know, the NCAA only tests at the NCAA championship. And I think they do the person that wins and then one random individual from the final.
Wow. That's a little unnerving. Just given the amount of transfers that can take place, the amount of recruits that can come in, you know, quickly, and they can be 23, 24 years of age. Yeah, it's a little worrying.
I would agree.
Hey, but you're at the top. So, yeah, not to worry too much. I mean, so that's, yeah. And so you've only been tested. Have you ever had, did you get tested at like US trials or anything like that? Or your only drugs test experience is through UVA?
Yeah, as far as I think, yeah, only drug test experience through UVA, as far as I can think of.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Do you have a pre-race ritual?
Pre-race ritual, I mean, I drink my espresso like hour and a half out every time. I'm a big coffee guy outside of running, yeah. So I feel like that's kind of like, I always enjoy drinking my coffee because one, it helps me run faster, and two, I just like it. But other than that, I just like to listen to music and kind of just try to sit down and just lock in and listen to music as long as I can.
Man, you're big. I swear Americans just, they just drink drip coffee and that's it.
Yeah.
You're not that, so you're on the espressos at least.
I like a flat white. That's my go-to.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Do you have a favorite track to go to actually for coffee? Like, is there a track around the US that you've gone to and like that's where the best coffee place is as well? Or is it your home?
Boston's pretty good. I'm trying to think what else. But Boston, there's always like a lot of really good coffee shops. Mm. So that's usually my favorite to go to. Mm-hmm. New York was good too. I was in New York for Millers games and there was a few really good places.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, let's just touch on Millers a little bit because was that your first time at Millers? I presume so.
So I ran the B race of the pro mile when I was in high school, but that was my first my first big experience.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what's that like running there?
It was pretty insane. And even like, you know, the days before when we're doing the pre-meet and stuff, I feel like I felt a little out of place because you're on the bus over and like Yarnagoose and Cole Hawker are there. And, you know, I'm a college kid and definitely feel like I'm a little bit of a fish out of water, but I feel like just kind of once it came to the race time, I kind of just try to remind myself that, you know, I can hang with these guys. And the environment itself of the race was insane. Like, it was so loud in there and it was just a super cool race to be a part of. And it's kind of a blur, but it was an awesome experience.
It's kind of a bucket list track, right? What's best track you run on?
I think the fastest track, like if I had to choose one track to just go run fast on is the BU track. That one just, it feels bouncy.
Absolutely. What did you run at BU?
I've run...
Is that indoors? Is that when you ran 736?
736 there.
Did you get to... You didn't get to run there any other time in the season then?
No, not last year. I went there every year of college. I ran a mile there my first year. I ran 800 there my second year. And then I ran the 3K there.
Are you on the side of the fence that there's certain people who think BU shouldn't count towards that NCAA qualifiers or even world qualifiers? They think BU shouldn't count. Are you on that side or are you like, hey, let's just go have fun? What's everyone stressing about?
I think let's just go have fun. Build more fast tracks.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, they should use it as a marker of like, we need to compete with this rather than get rid of it.
Yeah.
What's the worst thing you've ever read about yourself, if anything? Hopefully not too bad.
I'm trying to think of, I've read funny stuff on Let's Run. I like to go on to Let's Run and read stuff. I'm trying to think of anything specific. There's definitely, if you go scroll, there's definitely some funny stuff. There was a whole thread about me being in the transfer portal one time and there was like three pages of people trying to predict where I was going to transfer to when I wasn't on the transfer portal. And I think that was the only time I ever posted on Let's Run. I went in and posted that it was fake, but there's definitely some funny comments on Let's Run about me either not being as good as people say. Well, actually, that was a funny one. Before I ran 3:48 at Millrose, there was a whole thread on Let's Run titled, "Why is Gary Martin in the Wanamaker Mile?" And like pretty much complaining that that was my PR, you know, I shouldn't be in there and that I was going to get beat up and I wasn't going to run fast. So that was a good one.
Did you read that before or after the race?
I think I read it before.
Feel for the fire.
How did you get signed up for the Wanamaker Mile? Did they contact you or was, you know, were yourself and coach just knocking on the door being like, look, we want a fast race. Can you get us in? Because I presume you haven't got an agent.
I have an NIL agent. So Ray Flynn is my NIL agent and he's the meet director at Millrose Games, which was helpful, but it was more than that. It was more so Vin because me and Vin, like I knew I was in shape to run really fast and we were kind of looking for a big mile and Shane was going to Millrose to run the 800. So we knew it would work out and Vin reached out to Ray and pushed pretty hard, like vouched for me and said I was in really good shape and pushed pretty hard to get me into the meet. And after a little bit, you know, got in.
And then finally, do you have a favorite athlete on the circuit? Could be a massive name, could be someone we've never heard of, just they go about their business the right way, I guess.
That's a good question. I really like Yard. I feel like he's, you know, good guy and just I feel like I like his aggressiveness and I feel like I like the front run and there's been a lot of races where, you know, he's gone to the front and tried to run really fast and obviously that Millrose Mile was really cool, you know, being a part of that race and he kind of set it up well. So I feel like he's someone I like the style and how he runs and you know, I try to emulate that a little bit.
There you go. Well, look, Gary, thanks so much for chatting to us today. Really appreciate appreciate it. Great to get to know you, and best of luck for cross-country season and beyond.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.